strange noises, not so good. So, and I want to remind you that we have an audio archive of the whole series, and so if you missed anything, you can go, you can listen in, and everything's up for this year, and we've got most of the last 7 years up at Hemingway's Hemingway's poetry series.blogspot.com. Thanks to Mr. Sturica here, our audio genius. We cannot say enough nice things about. Okay, so we're going to go in alphabetical order tonight. We're going to go straight through, and then we'll take we'll have a photograph, we'll have book signing, and we'll have a break, and then we'll have the open mic. And I would really encourage you to buy some books tonight. Okay, you don't, and to put in your calendar. When a couple of upcoming books will be coming out, which we'll sort of mention as well. Our first reader tonight is Barbara Edelman, and we are celebrating her first full-length collection, Dream of the Gone From City, which is such a great title, published by Carnegie Mellon just like a few months ago, and she's the author of two chapbooks. She teaches at Pitt, and she coordinates the Writer's Cafe, and it is a joy to have her reading here tonight. Please welcome Barbara Edelman.
I think I'll try standing. I'm short. Just my book title's long, but I'm short. Hey, thanks a lot, Joan and Jimmy, for having me read, and I'm thrilled to be reading with this particular crew, and I'm thrilled to be reading first, because then I can relax and actually listen. So this book, Dream of the Gone From City, is a book that I worked on for a long time, and so poems cover quite a long period of time, but it's mostly family-related, and there's family, friendship, there are a lot of poems of loss, so I'm just getting you ready. But they're very funny. Okay, the first one, for Patty. I don't know what killed you, so I say it was the old wild life come knocking. I hadn't seen you since Cotati, Petaluma, Santa Rosa in skin white as hospital walls, eyes dropped back deep and gone solid. Patty, my absent, absent one. Before that were 13, in the nowhere of our Bible Belt town. Black sky, black highway, black lake. Patty, my 1960s, my freight train howl, my cowtown shithole, my one knee on Main Street, my girls' room cools, my smuggled fifths, my conned hooch, my under the bleachers feels, my payphone bomb scares, my swords into plowshares, my tear gas parades, my cornfield arrests, my 15, 16, my arm in arm partner into dark water. Am I too close to the mic?
No, you're fine.
It's okay. Assisted living. This has a little epigraph. I don't know. I couldn't find who wrote it. Every simile's an insurrection. Her phone is like a cordless baby. Her children are a blur of programmed digits. Each week, she writes new algorithms to survive, from toothbrush to spoon. Her softball glove, her Raleigh 3-speed are not even memory. Her new sports are dress, food, hygiene, a slalom course to every doorknob. A daughter's like a banister or vice versa. She's lost her League of Women Voters calendar. There may be scribbled meetings, names sweet as cherries, left to rot in a place where she can't smell them. Somewhere in the ivy, there's a dead animal, alive with a scent she's starting to enjoy, almost enough to roll in and howl. Every cell an insurrection, every misheard word a revolution. The house isn't gone yet. It isn't there either if she can't get inside. All the hard-won scabs and treasures, the family of objects, are stacking up in churches and thrift stores, in neighbors' garages, in lists her children carry. Every daughter is an insurrection. She gets around as a resourceful prisoner in the new place, sniffing out the secret exits, free diapers, abandoned New York Times with puzzles she can half finish, the paperback she can't see to read for more than 7 minutes. The Lost Poem. And this has an epigraph from Wisława Szymborska. Why does this written dough bound through these written woods? I'd stuck it in a mental cubbyhole, then all the cubbyholes filled up with rice and shoes. Maybe this is how it went. I found a pencil with an actual point and looked for paper. The dryer buzzed. I took the clothes out. As I was folding them, the phone rang. I said, hello, hello? The silence opened like a scrap of paper. Was it a robot or a murderer? There once lived a girl in a Soho loft with hair like a two-story warehouse. By her phone, she hung a chrome whistle. Who was it that rang and rang and would not speak? Did the numbers he touched become points on her body, the rings and the pauses between them her breathing? And what of the shriek of the whistle? I woke to say, of course, no need to write it down. It's obvious. The poem had a dampness and a list. Or was I sweating in the dream? A movie clings to me for days now, men with rifles and no masks. The poem did not have all that moonlight and blood. The poem had no horses. The woods below my home are white, their fragile branches lined in ice. The road is neither field nor road. Deer tracks pock the snow as far as I can see. Gunshots from the lower slope. I put the whistle to my lip. The poem lurches through the iced branches. Thank you. Maple Grove. They put him in the left wing, but by then he lacked a sense of serendipity or irony. He enjoyed the words, though. Sinister nurses, window on the parking lot. He no longer drove. He'd lost his mind sometimes. It came back for visits and left, like the rest of us. Then he lost his last name. The first shall be the last also. Did they think he wouldn't know himself as Edelman, Professor, Mister? They had time for one syllable, Milt. They were underpaid. So there went his parents, brothers, kids, adulthood. What's in a family name? Everything stank. Real flowers smelled like plastic. He no longer walked. He was not often pleasant. He'd lost his heart's sweetness sometimes. Of course he preferred the past. He could get there on his own, for one thing. The ice house at Lily Lake, where he hid with his twin on hot afternoons, like this one, the one in which he tells me that story, coaxed out for minutes into blessed shade. Then he explains hydraulic brakes. I think the growling was involuntary. After a long snarl, he'd sigh, okay. Getting it all out, I guess. Like when he said, piss, shit. A man who never swore, who never liked my mother's cussing in her two mother tongues, though he admired her flair for juxtaposition. He was passing through stages like a toddler, learning language as he lost it. I buzzed the nurse. My father's gurgling. Gurgle, said my father, traveling backward toward the first spring of sound. Jerry O'Malley visited daily. Milton Edelman, he said it on arrival and departure. Jerry O'Malley, said my father to his friend, learning that to name the whole person is to hold him fast throughout the arc of his translation, to reconstitute him daily at the heart's table. Thank you. Tunnel Road. And this also has a little epigraph. Obsession is the opposite of creativity, from LJ. If I look all day into a face that may be there or not there, I enter a tunnel. If I look all day into a face that is itself a tunnel, I enter A, windowless room, B, a windowless room. There was so much snow that there was only snow, and spruce trunks black in snow, and glide of Nordic skis on snow, and silence like a bridge of ice between two continents. There was a road called Tunnel Road we never found, a mated set of tracks we never saw, a warming hut we never reached, a fire inside the hut. At the hut we never reached, a man and woman park their skis and enter to a wood stove, table, iron poker, axe, light through two small windows. She stokes the fire. He throws on logs. She takes off gloves, then boots. He watches her undress. He thinks each layer must be the last, but there's another and another. We drew two stories through the hush of woods, amid the faintest bird tracks, the iced rivulets, the hemlocks dressed as polar bears. We took turns burrowing through powder or gliding in the other's tracks. The snow was falling now, or circling, climbing. Our hair was filled with jewels, our tracks erasing.
Thanks. I'm going to read this pretty new poem since we're hearing about the travel ban again. I was thinking about the travel ban, but has anybody ever heard of the Wren Boys or the Wren Hunt? So it's something that now takes place on St. Stephen's Day in Ireland, but it started as a pagan festival. And these great big guys get dressed up in strange costumes and hunt down a wren. And originally, it was the actual wren, the actual bird, because the wren sings all winter. So it was called the King of Winter. And these big guys were hunting down this little bird because of its song. So now they use a fake wren, and now it's part of the St. Stephen's Day festival. But I heard about that, and then I started reading about birds that migrate across oceans. And some of the birds that migrate the farthest are tiny. Like, they weigh 4 ounces when they start and 3 ounces when they finish. So they're truly tiny. And this thing I'm reading about the bar-tailed godwit, it's true. I actually read this. So, okay. So this is called The Intercontinental Bird Threat. Let us ban the black pole warbler, then, who drops in to feed along our east coast en route to Nova Scotia from Colombia. It's the size of a fist. Its song so creepily high, not all of us can hear it. It wears a yarmulke. On return, it soars like a goblin 3 days above the ocean without stopping. At very least, let's make the warbler pay a toll, the New York City bridge model, hefty fee to enter, fly out free. The witchy frigate bird can play the updrafts with such acrobatic tact, it will ascend half a mile above the Atlantic without flapping. Let us ban it. Its pterodactyl wings are freakish. Let us ban the Arctic tern for its black cap and cloak. Let us ban the northern wheat ear, who crosses ocean, ice, and desert. Let us ban the geese with their unholy lice. Let us ban the bar-tailed godwit, that flying softball, who inflates itself with fat, enlarging its organs, then shrinks them back in flight, feasting as it pumps its wings on its own liver and kidneys, flying 9,000 miles nonstop, Alaska to New Zealand. All that is fantastic, let us ban. Better yet, let us empty the sky. Let us crucify the godwit. Let us bear it on a bier drawn by 4 oxen. Let the godwits be dropped into martyrdom. Let them rain like dark coins. Let their bodies clog the water meadows. Let us hunt down the warbler, its notes so pure they hurt us like icicles in sunlight. Let us seek it out with drones. Let us roll in the tanks. Let us unmake the warbler, its body the size of a child's hand.
Thank you. I'm just going to read a couple more from the book. What She Taught Me. This was written as an exercise from a Julia Kasdorf poem. Things I Learned from My Mother, or something like that. What She Taught Me. My mother taught me to take back what was rotten, stale, or tasteless, and to expect an apology along with a refund. She taught me to walk in boys' shoes, to ride a bike with a bar, to smirk back at smirkers, to kick anyone who snickered. She hit me with a yardstick. She taught me to play ball, taught me to hit, to drive from the hips and swing, then lay down the bat like a daffodil. She taught me to run, to throw like a boy. She taught me to tell everyone to go to hell. She told me to go to hell. She taught me to drive when I was 9. She taught me to serve the men first. With her back to me, she taught me to adore my brothers, to mirror my sister, to pity the girl who stalked my sister in hallways, to call her Jew. She taught the whole town to compost, how to vote, to abort their unwanted young. She taught me to pull weeds at the root. She taught me not to say shit at the table. She taught me to say shit. She taught me songs. She taught me I couldn't sing. She taught me to love my body. She taught me I was loved for my body. She taught me to fold the napkin once and place the fork on it, to dampen the dust mop, to let the pan sit in cold water, to pull the skin off a chicken, to carry spiders outside alive, to hang suet, scatter corn on the stoop for titmice, wrens, chickadees, to laugh at the gathering of crashers, fat squirrels, chipmunks, rabbits, to love the muted beauty of the female cardinal in bright sunlight. Okay, thanks for being such a great audience. Last one. Mother of Bone. I don't have a system to measure how dead you are now. You were less dead at first, closer to surfaces. At the malleable border of sleep, I heard your quilted voice. I could not solidify the words. I trample the long autumn. Beds of leaves glow like fool's gold in sunlight. I want you to linger as you once did, at the rim of hearing, in the woman brushing her white hair on a sidewalk, in my own body's posture. You were not so dead then. You returned in a dream, to get clothes, I think. You didn't know how to pack for your trip. Childlike, you needed my help. You were often horizontal, pieced together like a leaf quilt from phone conversations. You lay in a white bed, your voice a brook inside your throat. I can line up all the unkind things you said to me, like tools on hooks in the garage, with their blades for making and unmaking. And I can line up all my kindnesses. And none of that can shovel over the clean bones of failure, the imperishable list of what I did and did not do. Thanks.